Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
This hour, Bump and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. I want you to join this conversation on the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. We're talking Seahawks, and we're talking about which side of the ball is a bigger concern for you right now, offense or defense. Now, the reason this question is important is because, in part, it's about what's gone wrong, what's gone right, and what kind of team this is supposed to be. That's what we're trying to get to the bottom of right here. So, Bump, which side of the ball is a bigger concern for you right now? Feel free to pick one, make your case for both, whatever you want to do.
All right, well, first, I'll explain what's going on both sides that concern me.
That's great. Good place to start.
Defensively, just playing the run. I mean, that 3-4 scheme is going to be tough to be stout against the run, especially at times where I saw where they had two big boys, two down linemen, then had their edge rushers who are outside linebackers walking up to the line of scrimmage. I just don't like the matchup there. I think you need more big bodies against the big bodies. So the run defense is what's concerning. The pass defense, I think, is going to continue to get better as Tariq Woolen gets reps, as Kobe Bryant gets reps, as those guys to start to work on that match zone, I think they'll be fine. Offensively, what's concerning is just the amount of plays that they're running. They go 47 and 49. Third down conversions aren't great, and Geno's not pushing the ball down the field. Now, which side am I most concerned about? I got to look at the offense. And I look at the offense because I look at that defense and I say, there are things that you can do with this personnel that I feel like are going to make them get better. You're not going to see another team like the 49ers when it comes to their run and what they like to do. I don't think people understand how special that really is, how they run that football with who they do it with. Now, they do have a young running back who's out for a couple of weeks now, Price, I think his last name is. But you know what the Niners do? They insert a guy, boom, this run game is going to work. So I look at the 49ers and I say, there's not too many teams that can do that. I think they can fix that. We saw that the Hawks were decent against the pass. Offensively, when you are not able to run the football, when you are not able to produce explosive plays, I'm going to be concerned because you need a couple runs of 15, 20 yards. You need a couple pass plays of 20, 25 yards. You need to connect the run game with the pass game and get the tight ends involved. And when you go from what we saw that first week to where we saw a little bit of everything, the run game wasn't great, but Penny could have had over 100 yards if there weren't a couple penalties. We saw the tight ends get involved. We saw the pass game kind of open up. We're still waiting to see DK. And that's another thing. The highest paid player on the offense is not touching the football. Mm-hmm. Right? You do not pay that man to come out and be a decoy and to block on running plays. You pay him to go down the field and make big plays. So I'm looking at this offense and I'm saying the defense, even though they lost this game, was it 27-7? Mm-hmm. The defense at times did just enough to say, okay, offense, here's the ball. Do something with it. It's not like the Niners went down every single drive and put up points. They held them to, what, 3 field goals during that game. There was a time where you're down 6-0. All right, offense, here's your opportunity to go down, drive the ball, and win. And we just didn't see that. So I think it's easier to fix what's going on that defense and put these guys in position. Whereas offensively, because you are on the attack, right, you have to be precise. You have to come up with a clear-cut plan to beat a defense. I'm worried a bit more on that offense. And you hear Pete talk because we've got to let Geno go. We got to get the Titans involved. We got to run the ball. Pete knows what's going on. Yep. You hear it in his press conference. So both sides are concerning, right? They have their points where you're like, all right, we got to fix these things. But I look at the offense and say, all right, you got to get going. No points in 6 quarters, Stace. Come on.
That's exactly right. Now, you only have 2 games so far. So take these stats, not necessarily with a grain of salt. I mean, it's in front of our eyes. They're obviously struggling, but some of these numbers, I'm guessing, are going to change, and certainly the average is going to increase over the course of the season. But right now, we're looking at a team that has 234 total yards per game. That's second worst, better only than Chicago. You're averaging just 178 passing yards per game. That's among the worst in the league outside of, again, just Chicago. You're averaging just 56 rushing yards per game. That is the worst in the league right now, not only that, you're averaging 12 points per game. Also, not super great. 7 points and then 17 points. It's not where you want to be as an offense. you've invested a ton of money in DK Metcalf.
Right.
You want to be able to use him more. You've got a number 9 overall pick on the offensive line, a third round pick on the offensive line, a player that you traded for and then extended also on the offensive line. I mean, you want to be a run heavy offense that can move the ball down the field. And like I just said, you have just 112 rushing yards. I mean, 112 rushing yards. There are teams that have gotten that in just a handful of games. The Browns have 401 through 2 weeks. The Eagles, the Lions, your week 4 opponent, they have 372 rushing yards. You have 112.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not great. That being said, when it comes to winning this season, more of my concern lies with the offense. I just haven't been able to see anything that tells me that they can move down the field effectively, efficiently, and dig themselves out of a hole when they inevitably get into one, because it happens to every single team. You get calls that don't go your way. You get an injury. You have a pick. You make a mistake. And then you're in a hole. It happens. What do you do to get yourself out of it? I don't know that I've seen enough to make me think that they can easily anyways. I'm not talking about like down a field goal. I'm talking about down 10, down 2 scores or more. How do you dig yourself out of it? I don't know yet for this team, but long term, I think I'm a little more concerned with the defense.
Really?
Yeah. I think that this is a team, when I think of you decided to, now this is again kind of like a mutual thing, but let's just say you decided to move on from Russell Wilson because he didn't want to be here. The philosophies were clashing, whatever, whatever. So in deciding to move on from him and sticking with your philosophy as a team, part of that philosophy, it isn't the sole part of the philosophy, but part of the philosophy was we want to be able to have this great defense. We want to be able to invest in our defense. We want to be able to have a really good defense and pride ourselves on that. And we don't want these guys to be gassed all the time, right? Well, if you've got all these investments you've made on defense, I think long term, the more important thing is to start seeing improvement here. I would feel okay about this team. Genuinely, I would feel okay about this team if they finished as a lackluster offense with a top 5 defense.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel just fine about them moving forward. What I don't feel super okay with is looking at a defense that has one of the highest paid safeties in Jamal Adams. You gave up 2 first round picks for. I know he's not on the field. One of the higher paid safeties in Quandre Diggs. You have a guy you extended in Puna Ford, a first round pick in Jordan Brooks, a second round pick in Daryl Taylor, your highest priced free agent in Uchenna Nwosu. This is not a defense you haven't invested into. In fact, you've made a lot of investments on defense. And we talk about this being a young team. No, no, no. This is actually one of the older teams. Now, you have a lot of inexperience. Those are 2 different things. And you've got rookies in starting spots. But this is a defense where you should start seeing your plan come to fruition. I mean, Jordan Brooks entering his 3rd season. Daryl Taylor, right? Jamal Adams and Quandre are veterans. I'm including Jamal because he's investment. I know he's not here this season. I think that just like knowing the type of team Pete Carroll wants to be, I want to see more from the defense. I know he wants to see
more
from
the
defense.
He wants a strong defense, and he wants to run the rock.
Yeah.
And neither are happening right now.
No.
Your defense gave up 27. They gave up 16 against the Broncos, gave up a lot of passing yards. But they're not where you expect them to be. The thing that keeps me optimistic about the defense is that I've seen Uchenna make plays.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Jordan Brooks make some plays. Tariq's been in good position at times. Kobe's been in good position at times. Quandre's been okay. And I look at this 49ers, I don't think people realize how difficult it is to play the 49ers and what they present. And if you aren't prepared to put bodies on bodies and play hard-nosed football, they're going to carve up anybody. I think in this situation, just the scheme defensively just didn't put these guys in the best position. I look at all these guys, and I'm like, Jordan Brooks is going to be a great linebacker. I believe in Tariq Woolen, and I believe in Kobe Bryant. But all your concerns are valid, right? You invest all this money into this defense. You expect it to happen right now. And I think that that's the issue with everyone who watches the Seahawks is that they want it now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you beat the Denver Broncos. You got to figure it out. No, you beat the Denver Broncos, but you still gave up 340. You still didn't put up any points in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
They're still trying to figure some things out. But one thing that the reason why I'm more concerned about this offense is because you have Rashad Penny, who you're supposed to lean on, and he's only getting X amount of carries. You should understand who Geno is, and you're not setting him up to be successful in the way Geno is. And I'll talk about it more in 4-down territory, what needs to happen with Geno. Both sides aren't where they need to be. But I just feel like the defense, it's easier to fix what's going on there and put guys in position to make plays.
Yeah.
Whereas offensively, the play call has to be right. You got to get better play out of Geno in the second half or just this next game because he's not pushing the ball down the field. And you have to use your weapons. It's almost like you can make the same argument for both sides, man. It's more perspective. And I understand giving up 27 points, you're like, oh, dang, this defense, they need to go. But I'm telling you, I watched that film, man. 49ers are special when it comes to just playing.
They are. I mean, they tear up
tough
the Rams.
Football. It's wild, man.
Well, and I think that, too, like, I don't see Geno as your long-term guy. So no. Geno not getting it done is okay with me. But I agree with you. Like, Rashad Penny not getting it done, more importantly, a guy like Ken Walker, if he were to go the season not doing much, DK, that's concerning.
Yeah.
Your offensive line not being good, that's concerning. Because you got two rookies, a former third-round pick, a guy who's going to be, you know what I mean? Like, you could have the same offensive line next year.
Yeah.
Maybe some changes at center or whatever. But, I'm going to go to the text line and we'll react to a little bit of what listeners have to say here. The 253 says offense. They agree with you, Bump. They haven't scored points in six quarters of football. The defense will get better over time. They had some great red zone defensive stops, but it means nothing if they can't score points. Now, I agree. You're not winning any games if you're not getting into the end zone, unless you're the 2000 Baltimore Ravens. 2001?
Yeah, somewhere. The 2000s.
Yeah.
We know what we're talking about.
Most people, by the way, saying offense. Stacey and Bump, it's got to be the defense. Pete's a defensive coach, and the defense hasn't been good in a couple years. That's the thing, is I'm looking more long-term, right? I'm looking a little more abstract. Like, the offense will need to be better to be competitive, period, especially in this league. But I'm nervous about the defense because you don't have a ton of young players. You've got a ton of investment. And I'm giving them a lot of leeway because it's the beginning of the year. You can't really hit in the preseason the way you want to or tackle in the preseason the way you want to. But, like, if missed tackles are an issue all season long, I don't feel good about that defense.
Yeah, but you do. You do got young guys, too. Think about it. People look at Cody Barton as not a young player.
I saw you counting on your fingers. Were you thinking of how many young players
yeah,
they have as
young
starters?
Guys. Yeah, I'm like, all
I
right.
I was like, I know you're thinking in your head, like, my counter argument is coming.
No, it's not even a counter. I'm looking to either support your argument or just see where else I can go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking defensively, they got Kobe, Tariq, Mafe needs to get more playing time. I'll talk about that in four down territory. You got Cody Barton, who's getting his first time really starting. So, I mean, they're young when it comes to snaps defensively, but they do have some veterans. And losing Jamal Adams changes this defense. You watch that 49ers game. Jamal Adams was built for that game. Mm-hmm. They would have rolled him down in the box. They would have been able to play that three-man front that they wanted, and he would have been causing chaos in there. So now I'm starting to think, was it the adjustments just weren't made? They tried Josh Jones in that position to say, okay, let's see if we can use him the same way that we use Jamal Adams. But, yeah, it's overall, I think it comes down to scheme on both sides. You know what you got now. Set these young men up.
Okay, I was going to ask. I agree for both that, like, I'm not ready to write off and be like, you don't have the right players. Like, you've got a lot of really talented personnel on your team. I think especially for offense, because the 49ers offense is just, I mean, that run defense for Seattle needs to change. You can't mm-hmm. miss tackles, but I'm like, all right, I'm willing to say that they're just adjusting. For offense, you've got a lot of players that we know are good that haven't been good, which is what's confusing to me.
For the Hawks,
uh-huh. Not a ton, but I mean, like, DK and
yeah.
When you look at the offense in the last six quarters that they haven't scored, is the bigger problem the people they have on the field or how they're using them?
It's how they're using them. And then Abe Lucas didn't have a great game. There were some miscues there. I saw one play where it's clearly a zone right. The young man is stepping left.
Oh.
You know, he's getting down the field, even though he's dominating his block. But once you disengage with him, now you're considered downfield. Little things like that to where you're going to get your growing pains on offense when you have a backup QB who's now your starter. You got two young tackles over there, and you have a coordinator who's trying to build off of what he did in week one. It's all a learning process. And I appreciate Pete coming out and saying, look, everybody has to do better. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Defensively and offensively. So you know what the true answer is? It's BOF. It's both of them.
Yeah.
Both. Offense and defense. Me being the offensive guy, I'm more concerned with the O because you have to put up points. You've put up 24 points in two games. Not going to be enough.
I'll give you the final word there because that is well said. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, Bump. Let's talk Geno. Has there been a game in Geno Smith's career where he did look like an elite passer? And if so, can he tap back into that?
Stacey had to go down to the archives for this one. 2013, he threw for 331 yards against Buffalo.
Perfect passer rating?
I don't know what the passer rating. Yeah, I think it was. It was pretty good. In 2013, he threw for 3 touchdowns against Atlanta. 2014, he was 20-25 for 358, 3 touchdowns against Miami. His whole career, he has 3 games with 300-plus yards, 2 games with 3 touchdowns. So there are moments where he looks like he can be a guy.
Okay.
But when you've been in the league that long and your numbers are that small when it comes to great performances, I don't know if you should expect anything other than him. He plays his best when he throws the ball 25 to 28 times. All right? Explosive plays. We're asking for explosive plays. His whole career, his longest plays, he's got 3. 74-yard pass, 51-yard pass, 69-yard pass. So that lets you know right there, okay, taper down expectations, but I don't think he's ever had a DK. I don't think he's ever had a Lockett. So how do you tap back into that? You have to do what Pete Carroll said and let him loose. Like, he's been sitting for a long time. He's got a chance to learn behind Drew Brees, Eli Manning, and Russell Wilson. If there's ever a chance for him to let that ball go, you let it go right now. Now, the likelihood of him doing this week in and week out, I just ran you the numbers, is not likely. But if you can get a couple plays from him, let that man loose and let him go. So how do you tap back into it? Establish the run. Same old story, right? You've never heard me say this before, Stace.
Never.
Establish the run.
I've never heard Pete say that.
To open up the pass, but you have to let him be. You cannot nickel and dime when you're working with a defense who's trying to figure themselves out and expect to stay in the game and win these tough games.
Second down. One of my favorite plays, Wildcat. Should the Seahawks continue to experiment with the Wildcat, and how do they actually get it going?
So I know now people are looking at this Wildcat like, oh my God, why are you doing it? You got DJ Dallas throwing an interception, and Pete Carroll says he wishes he would have stepped in and called a timeout there because he saw the look and it wasn't there. But they should stick with the Wildcat. I think they should set it up for later on the season. This isn't something where you're going to get instant satisfaction right now. You're not going to run Wildcat in week 3 and be able to open the game up in week 4. Every week you have to put this on film in some sort of way so that one time when you need it, when it's 3rd and 2, when you're at home and Luminous rocking and you need this play, you need this win, boom, then you bring out the trickery. When you have Ken Walker, DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, and Rashad Penny, all those dudes can run that thing. And I think we saw with just a glimpse of Ken Walker, his ability to make guys miss, right? So you make DJ the decision maker right at the point of that Wildcat, and you just start expanding. Run a simple zone. Run a simple counter. You don't have to do anything spectacular, but make the defense have to prepare for it and put it on film so teams have to prepare for it. And when you need it, then you throw that DJ Dallas throw. Just not in the end zone, not in the red zone. I prefer the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So in case, you know, just get this
maybe
man more space
to work.
Not
a pick in the end zone. Yeah. I also, it's shorter field when you get down there. I also, I think it would be a power move to do the same play again later, like week 17.
against the Niners?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they face again in December. 3rd down. All right, we had 2 questions here about offense. Let's jump to defense. Who needs more playing time on defense?
Boye Mafe and Daryl Johnson, number 4. I saw Daryl Johnson hop in. I'm like, who is that kid? Daryl Johnson, right? Boye Mafe, 23 snaps, he's got a sack. Daryl Johnson in 18 snaps, he has a tackle for a loss. Now, Uchenna Nwosu has been great, right? He's got sacks, he's got TFL, he has tip passes. Daryl Taylor has been up and down. He has 2 TFLs. I'm just saying these 2 young men have been producing at a high level with minimal snaps. You get these guys on the field, maybe it will push Daryl Taylor a bit more. There's no denying the talent that Daryl Taylor has. Like, he's got twitch, he's got quicks, he can get around, but he hasn't been playing up to par the past couple of days. So put one of these young guys behind him and have them push him, man. They deserve it. Boye needs to get on that field. Daryl Johnson, a big surprise to me, played with more intensity than a lot of the guys out there against the 49ers. That's not easy to do. I need to see Boye Mafe and Daryl Johnson out there a bit more.
4th down. All right. We had a Monday Night Football doubleheader last night. The Bills beat the Titans 41-7. The Eagles beat the Vikings 24-7. 2 blowouts. Who impressed you most during Monday Night Football?
All right. There's one guy who impressed me and then an honorable mention. The honorable mention I'm going to say is just Stephon Diggs.
Oh, I mean, of course.
12 for 128, 3 touchdowns. And at one point, when are we going to get a receiver, like a real MVP, for the real MVP? Like, what Cooper Kupp did last year was ridiculous. These quarterbacks have to throw the ball. They throw it to receivers. Come on now, give these receivers some love, man.
What do you think the number that a receiver would have to get?
You'd have to get like 1,900 yards, maybe. You know,
I'm looking
some
at
round,
Cooper Kupp's total yards.
Around 15 to 20 touchdowns.
So Cooper Kupp last year had,
I think he was 1,800.
He had He had 1,947 yards and 16 touchdowns.
Come on now. Like, come on. That's extremely impressive. I understand the pressure that the quarterbacks are under. It's a quarterback league. But goodness gracious, if you're throwing the ball more than ever.
2,000 receiving yards.
You're throwing the ball more than ever in league history. Who catches that thing? It's these receivers, man. Come on. I know I'm a receiver. I might be a bit biased, but that's real. But who impressed me the most last night was Jalen Hurts, man. 26 to 31, 331, one touchdown, two rushing touchdowns, got eight pass catches involved, completed 83% of his passes. This is a perfect example of why you must be patient with these quarterbacks. A lot of these quarterbacks got 1 or 2 years to prove themselves, and if they don't execute the way that Pat Mahomes does, then they are thrown out the league. Like, you have to commit to someone and something. Things don't just happen overnight. And I think Jalen Hurts is a perfect example of that. What do? You surround him with a good defense, with a good run game. He's got a number one receiver. You got a young receiver in Devontae Smith. You got Miles Sanders in the backfield. You got Sirianni. I believe, is that the head coach for the Sirianni?
Nick Sirianni.
His second, third year. Like, people have to realize that to build a franchise, to build a football team, you have to put the pieces in the right place. And it doesn't happen overnight. This is not baseball or basketball where you can just go buy a bunch of superstars and say, okay, go produce. There's a salary cap. Guys get hurt all the time. You have to depend on young guys. You're dependent on 22, 23-year-olds all the time out in the NFL. I'm just saying, all the scrutiny that Jalen Hurts has been through, for him to come out on Monday Night Football, perform the way that he did, lets me know that, look, you got to crawl before you walk. Develop these quarterbacks, man. Don't throw a kid like Trey Lance in the fire and run him like a dang running back.
I really like this question on the Mac and Jacks text line from the 206. I only saved us a minute 30, so if you don't have an answer, we'll put it in like what I need to know a bit later in the show. Obviously before dugout. From the 206, with Tua, Jalen Hurts, and Josh Allen not doing well initially, are there any other quarterbacks recently who may have been written off too early?
All right, let me get back to that.
Yeah. That's a good one. Because it's like, well, what if it is Trey, but you don't know that it's Trey?
Mm-hmm. Let me get back to that.
Automatic reaction. Now, he's not good. We saw him at his worst last night. Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan.
Kind of flailed with Miami early, gets a second chance with Tennessee. And when he's in the right system, because that's the thing. He wasn't going to be a savior quarterback when you're drafted that high. That's exactly who you're supposed to be.
Yep.
But when he came in and was, kind of like the game manager who could make good plays but had a great run game and, you know, a solid defense for a while. Yeah. Obviously, they had low points. That's what comes to mind first. Just quarterbacks with second chances, right?
Yeah.
Drew Brees eventually going to New Orleans. But I'm trying to think if there was someone who was – because Josh Allen, early in his career, certainly his first season, people were like
–
exactly. His first season, people were like, this guy's – This was a miss.
Mm-hmm.
This was a huge mistake. And now he's MVP candidate number one.
And stat correction. Thank you, 360. The Hawks offense has only scored 17 points.
Oh, thank you. Oh, good. All right. Well, I am glad that we did that. Oh, yikes. It's all gross. Okay. So we've got two Burning Mariners questions coming up at 11:45. We are getting back to Seahawks at noon with Brady Henderson. Before we do any of that, though, a wild fight at an Arkansas Razorbacks football game. And also more crazy just stories coming out of Scott Frost's tenure in Nebraska. That's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. You guys, someone sent us cookies. They're absolutely amazing.
Wow. Yeah, whoever it was.
Curtis scarfed a whole one. What one did you have?
It was called The Cousin. It was like a chocolate chip cookie, but it also had like sea salt on it. Mm. So the salty sweet.
Where are they from? What's the bag say?
Cookie break.
And they didn't say who they were. They just said, huge fans of the show. Have a great day. Now, first of all, thank you so much to whoever sent this. These cookies are absolutely amazing. Secondly, though, what if they sent them before they realized that I didn't wear teal for Teal Tuesday and now they're going to come take them back?
Oh, no.
You're going to send a bill.
Yeah, we're getting invoiced.
They're like, those weren't free. It's like you take it, you buy it, you go into a hotel and you're like, look, a free mini bar. No.
Nah.
No, it's not. Don't open anything.
$15 for that shot.
I know. All right, let me get to the timeline here. The timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. Curtis, this is an interesting one. This is a really cool one to find here. Very weird. Beyond Meat COO Doug Ramsey was arrested Saturday at an Arkansas Razorbacks football game. Uh-oh. Why? Because he was allegedly biting a man's nose in a parking garage altercation. Who among us?
Totally, you know, normal, I mean, thing to have.
Yeah,
happen.
Who among us has not done that before? The altercation started after Doug Ramsey allegedly punched out the back window of a Subaru after it made contact with his car. I'm going to pause here in the story to say,
not the Forester.
This sounds like a
not the Forester. That is a Northwest staple.
How dare you?
This sounds like an incident of road rage. If he's punching out windows and cars,
yes,
and it happened in a parking garage, he's biting noses.
Yes. But also, what I want to do is, if you tried your hardest to take your fist and punch in a car window, do you think you could?
No, I'm breaking my hand.
Exactly. Bump, could you?
Yeah, I think I could.
Do you want to try it?
Negative.
We got a whole lot full of cars
right outside.
Any, mini, miny, mo.
Someone in the newsroom is going to have a big surprise when they go out there.
If you're biting someone's nose, you're getting your butt whooped. Like, when you bite somebody's nose and all, you must be on the ground getting served up.
That's the last thing, your last resort. That's what he did. He punched in the Subaru window. He wasn't expecting the Subaru driver to get out and be 6'4". No, I don't know what the Subaru driver looked like. And then he's just biting his nose. Now, what I want to know is, like, did he bite his nose off? I mean, let's keep going here and read
bite
the story. I don't know. No, he didn't bite it off. But the Subaru owner then got out of his car, obviously. I mean, nothing I do in a parking lot deserves you punching out my back window. Gets out of his car. Ramsey allegedly starts punching him and then bit his nose. Did Arkansas win that game?
They did, but it was a much closer game than anticipated. They beat Missouri State 38-27, but I think they needed three touchdowns in the fourth quarter to win. They were trailing for most of the game, but maybe tensions were a little high. I mean, you're coming off a close game, number 10 Arkansas, expected to just wax the floor with Missouri State. That doesn't happen. And then a guy comes and sideswipes your car in the parking lot. You're already a rich guy. You don't usually have to deal with poor people problems or regular people problems like that. Like, that's the thing. This guy's a COO of a big time company. Like, Beyond Meat is in pretty much every grocery store nationwide.
Yeah. Carter from Tacoma says, leave it to the Beyond Meat CEO to try human.
Ew.
Now, as far as how, plug your ears for 15 seconds if you are squeamish. According to CNBC, Ramsey ripped the flesh on the tip of the nose with his teeth in that fight. He also threatened that he would kill this person, which, like, if you're trying to bite off my nose, I'm assuming that's hand in hand.
No one's biting.
Look, I don't want to kill you. I just want to rip off your nose with my teeth. I'm assuming those are kind of like the intentions are linked there. You know what I mean?
A totally
tough stuff for
normal
Doug Ramsey
day in the SEC.
A totally
just
normal
means
day
more
at an Arkansas Razorbacks football game. Love Arkansas. All right. I really do, though.
Arkansas.
Blue Pig. Family's from
Blue
Arkansas.
Pig,
all right. Next story here in the timeline. On his podcast, Bruce Feldman shared that former Nebraska head coach Scott Frost didn't even attend his own staff meeting for the Huskers. It's going to be cut number 17. This is for the Huskers' first game of the 2022 season.
Ireland for that game against Northwestern. It's like there's a staff meeting and the head coach doesn't make it.
What?
Yeah. So
did the head coach have too much Guinness the night before? What happened there?
I don't know why he didn't make it, but that's not setting a good tone going into your first game of the first game of the season, especially when everybody knows you're on the hot seat.
So, I mean, again, Scott Frost already in trouble just deciding randomly, you know what, Adam?
But do you think it's because he knew he was getting at least a $7 million buyout, if not more? Maybe it was
He was already checked. See, a little bit of senioritis.
Because October 1st, his buyout was going to drop from like $15 million down to $7 million. So he knew he was guaranteed at least $7 million. Maybe he was trying to do everything possible to get fired prior to October 1st so he could collect that extra $8 million.
I'm going to say he had some family obligations, and he relied on his coordinators to run the meeting. I don't freaking know. Is he offensive coordinator? defense coordinator? Is he a coordinator or is he just the head
coach? Scott Frost? Yeah.
He was the head coach.
Yeah, was just the head coach. But he wasn't a coordinator, though. He didn't call plays. All right, so.
So he's counting on other people.
He's counting on other people to run. It's still not a good look, though.
Yeah, it's just. Man, I wouldn't say Scott Frost is up there among, certainly not. I mean, we just talked about Herm Edwards the other day, right? Like, not the most egregious examples of head coaches not getting it done.
His failing at Nebraska is one of the more surprising turns of a coach in recent college football history, because he's a Nebraska alum. He was the quarterback of their most recent national championship team.
Mm-hmm.
He led UCF to an undefeated season prior to taking the job at Nebraska. Everything pointed to this guy being a success, a home run hire in Lincoln, and then it was an abject disaster for the entirety of his tenure in Nebraska. And now things are so bad in Lincoln that they're trying to convince themselves that hiring Urban Meyer would be the good thing in this situation. Like, come on now.
You know how there was articles about quiet quitting? Someone said quiet quitting is real. That's exactly what Scott Frost was doing.
Did you see the video of him leaving the office?
No.
He's walking down the stairs. You know, you like slide down the railing on the stairs. He slides down the first five.
No, yeah. He does not.
Maybe.
I think it was him that just slid down the hand railing.
Yeah.
He's just done.
He's like, 15 million.
He's
out of there.
All right, you guys. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have Brady Henderson on with us in 20 minutes. We got a couple Seahawks questions for him. We're going to take a look around the NFL. Then we're going to play Hype Train before we get into the dugout. Scott Service is going to join us at 1:30 instead of 1 today, but it is all Mariners from 1 to 2. So this is going to be our quick Mariners conversation before we get to that and before we get to some Seahawks stuff. We have two burning Mariners questions after yesterday's game. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Luis Castillo and the Mariners open a series against the A's later today. First pitch is at 6:40 p.m. Pregame show starts at 5:30 p.m. right here on your home for the Mariners, Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. We have two burning Mariners questions that have yet to be answered, well, because the season and the playoffs aren't really here yet. So, number one, who's your number three starter? And number two, a little bit about playoff seeding. Do you want them to be the number four seed, host a playoff series, or be six and travel to Cleveland and possibly New York? So let's start with the number three starter. Logan Gilbert struck out 11 last night. For a while, it seemed like the obvious answer might be Kirby, and maybe Logan could surprise you. Logan been having a phenomenal September so far.
Easy. It's Logan. Right now it is. We'll see George.
You take Logan over Kirby?
Right now.
Flavor of the month.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Easy. We'll see what I say next week.
You know, sports is what have you done for me lately? And lately, this young man has grown a goatee. He's shown more emotion. And now he struck out 11 batters.
No, Logan. It's Walter is
Walter,
your third starter.
My bad.
Walter is your third starter.
I'm feeling Walter, man. Me and Walter should kick it every now and then. Let's have a beer or something. Because I'm feeling his vibes, man. I feel like he's loosening up. He's like owning who he is. And it's fun to see an athlete. When you see that maturation and you're like, okay, he doesn't have to be just a stone cold guy on the mound who doesn't show any type of emotion. If there's one player who's allowed to show emotion when he does something great, it's the pitchers. You know, pitchers can do whatever they want to. They can holler and scream when they strike somebody out. How dare a batter stand there too long and admire his work and do a bat flip? But yeah, I'm with Logan, man. Right now I'm with Logan. I'm feeling his vibe. The goatee is clean. Walter is in full effect.
What do you think about this hot take from the 253 on the Mac and Jack's text line? I want Castillo, number one, obviously. Gilbert and Kirby. No, Robbie Ray?
Can't do that.
It's a question that I've been pondering as well over the last couple of days. Because what if Gilbert and Kirby are your second and third best pitchers in the rotation? Yes, Robbie Ray has been incredible over the season second half here. And, I mean, he's had a couple of starts. I think his most recent start against the Angels didn't go so hot. What if Gilbert and Kirby are pitching better than Robbie Ray heading into the playoffs? Now, what if Ray continues to, you know, pitch the way he has from the majority of this season? And,
yeah,
you know, you gave him a big contract this last offseason. It kind of almost cements him as part of your playoff plans for sure. But what kind of message would that send to him in year one of the contract when he's got two more years guaranteed, potentially four more years guaranteed of it.
Well, and when it's not like a Jesse Winker situation where you brought in someone who was an all-star who just pretty consistently, with few exceptions over the course of the season, has just been okay and otherwise kind of underperformed your own expectations. With Robbie Ray, like, he's been solid. It took him a minute to get going. But, I mean, he came close to a no-hitter. Like, he's had phenomenal outings, and he hasn't been phenomenal of late. But that's not to say that he hasn't been one of your better starters.
Here's the thing. With Kirby and Gilbert, you can say, what have you done for me lately? They're young. With Robbie, it comes down to money, right? You're paying this man so much money, he has to be in the mix. And he's a veteran, right? He has a bunch of innings under his belt, and you feel like, if it gets down to the pressure situations, he will be able to handle it. And it's ego. Like, you have to do some damage control when it comes to athletes. I know people hate hearing it, but you have to make sure his ego is intact and ready to go for the long haul. Because if he does continue to play at a high level and produce the way that we've seen him at times, you want him happy to be here. You want him to want to be here. So you can't slap a man's ego. Not him. These youngsters, you know, they can pay their dues a little bit.
But is it? Do you stop catering to that ego when that person stops being good? Like, you'd still cater to an athlete's ego if he's had some bad starts, but ultimately can be really solid for you or great for you. But if someone's not good,
why
cater to the ego? I'm not including Robbie Ray here. No.
But I think Robbie's great. I think you're right. Eventually, you got to produce, right? I don't think Robbie's there yet. 206 is Robbie's road ERA is over 5 this year.
Curtis, is it? No way.
Well, let me take a look at it.
Remember when we were doing a hype train, Robbie Ray will finish the season with an ERA under 3? And people were like, that's a stupid
under four.
That's a stupid hype train. Why would you ever do that?
His road ERA is 5.08.
I don't like it.
Home ERA 2.73.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't like it. That's fantastic.
Well, that actually takes me very naturally into our next question here. Playoff seeding. Would you want the Mariners to be the number 4 seed, so the number 1 wild card team, and host a playoff series? My answer is automatically yes, but you could also be number 6 and travel to Cleveland, a team that you've beaten before, and possibly New York, a team that you've beaten before. So it's almost like, would you rather face off against one of these wild card teams that you've kind of struggled against both at times, or I think Cleveland's beatable.
Like, you would have to play
AL Central in general,
either
beatable.
Tampa Bay or Toronto, which,
yeah.
Like, hate to say it, but if you play Toronto, there's a chance Robbie Ray won't even be available in the series.
Correct.
Tampa Bay is a really good team. And then we all know how good Houston is. They've won. They're going to probably win 100 games this season.
Whereas the AL Central is a hot mess express.
Yeah, the Guardians are not great. And the Yankees, you beat 4 out of 6 times. In fact, you have beaten Cleveland and New York this year combined 10 out of 13 times.
Here's the thing. It is really, really hard not to want them to host a series, even if it's against a harder team.
I don't even care. At home. It's for the M's fans, honestly. Yeah. I get the road is a bit tougher. But I think after 21 years, these people who have shown up, I mean, there are season ticket holders who have shown up to almost every game, been invested emotionally in this team. I realize it's a harder path, but for the fans, I think they deserve a home.
Mariners home record. Curtis, do you have it in front of you? I was trying to find it here. I'm assuming it's obviously better, as it would be for most teams. But there's something about them being at T-Mobile that's allowed them to really benefit from the crowd.
The Mariners have almost an identical win percentage at home as they do on the road. They're 39-32 at home and 42-33 away.
So would I rather see the team face Cleveland, most likely, or would I rather see them host Toronto or Tampa Bay? Right?
Basically, yeah. That's the million-dollar question right now.
What would you want?
I think I would be okay with rolling the dice and going on the road against Cleveland. I really would. I think you are a better team than Cleveland in every facet. Mm-hmm. I think you've got a better starting rotation than they do. I think you've got a better bullpen. You just took 3 in a row from them in their ballpark. You have had their number. And we're not talking having their number like in April and May. We're talking in late August, early September. You have recently played Cleveland.
Yeah.
You guys are thinking too logically.
What do you think, Bump?
I'm at home. I want the home. I want them to be at T-Mobile Park and just give the fans a little mo. That's all I want.
Seabass from Puyallup makes
a really good point.
You want either four or six. Yep. You don't want five.
Yep.
Because five, you're then on the road against Tampa or Toronto.
I was going to say just our luck, they'll get five, but I'm knocking on wood, knocking on wood. All right, you guys, we're going to bring on Brady Henderson. He's going to join us in a couple minutes. We've got lots of Seahawks questions for him. If you've got one for Brady, go ahead and send it in to the Mac and Jacks text line, 866-979-3776. He covers the Seahawks for ESPN. So we're going to talk about the team, what they need to do to get right here. We're going to take a quick look around the NFL. We're going to wrap with Hype Train because the final hour of the show is all Mariners. The dugout starts at 1 p.m. Scott Servais is going to join us at 1:30. Lots of good stuff still to come. Don't go anywhere.